Good afternoon, honorable members, minister, deputy minister, commissioner, public service commissioner, Temeni, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. We are going to have a waking afternoon today. Normally we have our committee sitting and at 9:30. Today, as you all know, it's a cabinet day and it's impossible for us to have the minister with us if it's a Wednesday. So we actually had to adjust in order to have the minister being part of this meeting as well. It's a working afternoon, and we did get the presentations in pigeonholed members, if I'm right. That is going to be done. It is a follow-up from last week's meeting. My belief is that last week's meeting, we managed at least to discuss the report in detail. And therefore, we all move within the background of knowing what the report entails, because the DG did actually outline the entire report. What we're going to do now is as outlined on the agenda. And just to bring forward the agenda for today is that we're going to have a briefing done by the Minister of Public Service and Administration on the implementation of the Millennium Development Goals by the governance and administration cluster. So we're actually moving towards evaluating the impact that government is able to do. You know, it's part of what we need to do when we have passed budgets, the implementation, and these are commitments. We're trying to bring a correlation of all that. But as you know, the issue of the MDG is part of the process that will go to the seminar. I don't know if I have a copy of the processes up till to the seminar, but if I don't find it, I'll do it at the end of the meeting just to outline the processes. Because if we have this meeting today where we are overseeing governance and administration, we are going to have other cluster meetings of this nature where they will be overseeing economy, they will be overseeing the social cluster, and also the justice. So it's part of the entire process. How we feature as members of parliament within this process is purely by oversight. And therefore, part of the oversight will be to evaluate whether the commitments that government does, how do they implement them within their work. We will actually develop a proper system, you know, because we don't want to work as if there are grey areas where we say how does Parliament feature in the whole process. With our understanding on oversight, we will feature alongside the same way of overseeing, and therefore we will discuss a number of other things that comes along. We want to believe part of these meetings of the MDGs are going to also assist to establish a system of how do we track down the commitments, the conventions, the twinning agreements, etc., that government enters into. How do we then feature as Parliament in terms of also making sure that we see to it that the country does comply with the commitments that they have done. If I recall very well in terms of the apologies, I recall only the apology from Honorable Van Schalkwyk, who will not be here with us today. And do you have other apologies, Reza? Williams is here. Who else? Okay. All right. No, I think, yeah, with those. Yeah, those are... Honourable Andrea?
Madam Chair, as you can see, I'm here, but I came all the way from Johannesburg especially to attend this meeting, but I've got to fly back tonight to my constituency, so I have to leave at 4 o'clock. I was given to understand that the meeting was going to start at 2:30.
Okay, we'll see how to proceed. All right. Okay, actually, the intention of this meeting was to have other chairpersons of who reside within governance and monitoring, but because of a variety of commitments, most of them cannot make it for this meeting, and therefore we are facilitating this as public service and administration. Okay, so Deputy Chairperson, Honorable Tengweni is a deputy chairperson in the Public Services Commission, as most of us are familiar with her. And I won't introduce her because of obvious reasons, you know, I understand minister and deputy minister is like, okay. So what we're going to do, we're going to then allow the minister to actually do a presentation along the agenda of today, taking it forward from last week's meeting, so that we're able to conclude our task as a committee. Because what we need to do is to identify how far have the governance and administration cluster gone in terms of implementing the MDG goals, also within their task. We know that most of the MDGs had been, government had aligned them in a particular way. Once they did the planning, we will get that from the presentation, how far does it go. And also just to indicate then that the process is expected to take place as follows. We'll be going on with the committees doing the, you know, because some of them it will be committees. Once they've called a meeting, they'll also do oversight on MTGs. That will take place within April until the beginning of May. And then end of May, we're expecting that we table, it's tabling of the committee report on the findings. And then the first 2 weeks of June, it's preparation of draft consolidated committee report. We actually would avail this program that people can be able to go through and see it. The third week of June, it will be submission of the draft consolidated committee report to the speaker and to the chief whip's forum. The 10th to the 12th of August is a seminar on the MDGs in the country, and it will be around Cape Town as a blend. In August, there will be a preparation of the draft report on the seminar. The seminar will be a roundup, so end of August until the finalization. First week of September, it will be submission of the draft consolidated committee report to speaker, followed by publication of the report in the ATC of Parliament. The second week of September, it will be a debate on seminar report in preparation to the APU conference, and the APU are expecting that it will be attended by the speaker, and that will happen towards the end of September. Okay, just to outline those processes, and therefore it emphasizes the task that I was indicating last week, that we are tasked as this committee to oversee the implementation of the MDG by this cluster. Something that I didn't indicate, maybe people are asking themselves, why the Public Service Commission now? Part of the task team that we have, and part of, once the report is drawn, it's drafted, it is impossible for Parliament to go out there and verify if these things are still correct. At that point, once the report is there, we are going to task Public Service Commission to try and validate all the facts that we have actually found from our oversight. So this is part of a collaboration in terms of making, and therefore there is also a role that Public Service Commission will play along this. Along that, I think, Minister, if you're ready, I will hand over to you for the presentation of the MDGs in governance and administration.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and my salute to the Deputy Minister, to the Deputy Chairperson of the Public Service Commission. We are here to do a presentation on the topic. The UN Millennium Development Goals and South Africa. We are here as a team which I'm leading. I'm told my name is Richard Masinyan Kwanan, Jack Daniel Baloy. But please remember only one name. Rich. The deputy ministers here, we have the DG Temba Maseko, we have the COO Tulumanzini, we have Barbara Watson, Barbara, we all know you. Just identify that Barbara Watson, she's the chief director responsible for diversity management. We have Dr. C. Posnale. Thank you. Chief Director responsible for employee health and wellness. Employee health and wellness. We have Dr. Busiega Matewa. Thank you. Director responsible for African Affairs. We have Shamila Abrams, parliamentary officer. We have Judy Simon, Ministry Parliamentary Research Analysis Unit. We have Johannes Ranted, director in the office of the DG. Of course, the chair has indicated that the Public Service Commission is here. We acknowledge the deputy chair, we acknowledge the DG, and the support staff parliamentary officer. Was here also. We acknowledge that. We are going to do a presentation on this topic, the MDGs, and Chairperson want to appreciate and congratulate Parliament for having taken a decision to organize a seminar. The seminar that is looking at the role of legislature in dealing with issues of the MDGs. It is a very important decision that having been taken, because it will provide a platform of engaging on topics like this. And it's so important also when the Public Service Commission is brought into the picture, because ours will then be saying that from a point of view of those who are involved in making sure that we work towards and we attain this goal, and to those who have to ensure that there is oversight work in us doing all these things, it's always important that we do that. You know, international instruments like the Declaration on the MDG, what they do to all of us is to then make a call and then say, in this area, let's do things this way, that's the expectation, and let's account. Now, we then account and we say, this is who we are against the mirror of this MDG. In response to that international instrument. But also what international instruments do is to then serve as a mirror where we look at ourselves and then say, apart from us submitting reports and account in terms of what is happening, apart from us being assessed at the international level or at the continental level, and were found to be at a particular position. Apart from that, when we use this instrument as a mirror, what do we see? Mirrors are known for reflecting the object in front of them. Sometimes you look at the mirror, I don't know how many times, I don't like the mirror myself. You may look at the mirror standing in front of it and it does not reflect a person who you thought you are. You may do all what you want to do, including breaking the mirror, but we are told that mirrors don't lie. Now, if these international instruments are to be used as mirrors, we then look at ourselves and then see how far are we going. We set ourselves targets in as far as the various areas that constitute the goals of the MDG as a nation. we set ourselves target. So much as we then say, up to the year 2014, this is what at the UN level we're supposed to be performing in as far as these goals of the Millennium Development. But internally in the country, we have our own targets. So when we mirror ourselves, we then say, how far are we there? Do we have policies in place? Do we have practical arrangements to work towards attaining that? Are we actually walking the talk in terms of the plans we set ourselves? So that is on the mirror part of it. So for a seminar like this, it's very important that we find ourselves having our legislators participating in that. We participated at the last session, the last meeting, as the chair has indicated, talking about this issue. When we participated there, we then said, yes, our portfolio committee calls on us to respond in terms of the MDGs. Now, we then took a stance that then says, let's talk about the MDGs for what they are, and we actually give a detailed breakdown, not zooming only on what we are doing, but also then saying what we are doing is part of the whole. As we know that as a country, ever since we started to participate in these AMDGs, we have actually submitted several reports, last year one being the first report, where we indicated how compliant we are in as far as concerned. And I want to indicate that at that level, the reports reflect country reports. Because it's government, it's civil society, it's business, it's all the stakeholders that are actually part of this process that are then saying, yes, here we are. Because why it is like that? It is because in terms of the declaration itself, it was found that it will be unfair to expect that you write a country report where it's only government that comes forward and write a report. It will be unfair for business or civil society, but it will be fair for all of us to operate and then say together, we can write a report. So we approached it at that angle. And for today, we will then be saying, much as this is what is an average reflection of our performance in terms of the MDG as a country, but what is the specific focus in as far as the governance and administration cluster? So that is what we're going to present, which is the work of all departments that are part of the governance and administration, including public service and administration, performance monitoring and evaluation, planning, finance, home affairs, and all those other departments that are actually part of this cluster, to then say what are those things that we are then doing out of the 8 Millennium Development Goals, which ones apply close to or perfectly to what we have to do. So we did talk about that at our last meeting, but that was not like sort of detailed. We provided more details on the general side, which is the Millennium Development Goals as the country sees it, the report that was in terms of the report that was submitted last year, and it was well received. Of course, the indication that there is room for improvement. So as of today, like I've indicated, we'll be zooming into specifics. When we constituted the team to come here, we then want to be as practical as possible. That's why when it comes to questions that may have to be raised, we then say we'll actually have to respond to some of those issues in terms of our own targets as a country, and not in terms of the targets that are set for us after the UN declaration on the MDGs. So that is what we're going to do, and the DG is going to lead us in that presentation. And without much ado, Chair, I want to hand over to the DG to deal with the presentations. Of course, we'll then be ready to answer the softer questions, the difficult ones. We'll leave it to the DG and his team. Over to you, Baba Maseko.
Thank you, Minister. Chair of the committee, members of the committee, Deputy Minister, Deputy Chair or Chair of the Public Service Commission, all protocol had observed, members of the PSC over there. We're going to try and go through this presentation as quickly as possible because we assume that members of the committee have read part of the document. They would have seen it. The idea being that we afford you the opportunity to ask questions later on because if you spend all your time doing the presentation, you will not have enough time to ask questions. Minister, my heart is beating quite fast at this stage because this is an important presentation, and especially the second one to the committee. But when my heart beats hard, you shouldn't worry. The only time you should worry is when it stops beating, because that is the sign that we have a problem. This is what we're going to be covering in the presentation. Once again, assist the committee to see the linkages between the GNA cluster program of action and the MDGs. We'll again talk about those cluster programs that, in our view, are contributing towards meeting the MDGs, and then indicate our cluster activities with regard to the various MDGs. So as you see in that introduction, all of those four items are actually the MDGs, but we'll give more details of it. But with background, and again very quickly, we just remind members that the MDG goals or MDGs come from the UN Millennium Declaration, which was signed by 189 countries, including 147 heads of state and government, which was signed in September, and from the further agreement which was assented to by the heads of state in the 2005 World Summit of Leaders. So this is a global project supported by almost all the countries around the world. So we see it as quite an important part of the work of the UN system. In the summit and in the declaration, basically, the MDG identifies 8 key goals that must be met by the rest of the world, and these are outlined in the slide: eradicating extreme poverty and hunger, achieving universal primary education, promoting gender equality, blah, blah, blah. I don't need to go through the list, as I'm sure members have seen and are aware of these goals. In this slide, what we try and do is to just highlight some of the targets which are included. I'll just read the first one, and the rest members will see. The way the targets are structured is that, for instance, target 1A will say to halve between 1990 and 2015 the proportion of people whose income is less than $1 a day. So that's how poverty is measured around the world. So there's consensus as far as that is concerned. So that's how this slide is basically trying to do. And in the interest of time, again, one does not need to read the slide to the members, but we just tell you easy reference. These are the goals, these are the targets, and we'll even use some captions to help you follow the MDG process. Coming back closer to home, we just want to again emphasize the point that the South African government has taken very keen interest in the implementation of MDGs, and what makes us quite pleased with the work that the government is doing is the fact that there's clear alignment between the MDGs and the government's program of action. And what government has done is to integrate the MDGs into the medium-term strategic framework covering the period 2009 to 2014. And as you know, the ruling party has 5 priorities that it has identified, and what government has done is to look at the MDGs, the ruling party's priorities, and we've translated that into 10 strategic priorities for government.
For now, he's talking about the ruling party priorities.
can I just?
And then as we go further, we'll talk about the government. We can't chairperson want even for a second to operate as if in this government of South Africa there's no ruling party. So on the background, it will be fair, but very fair, for the portfolio committee to allow the presentation to flow.
Madam Chair, on a point of order, please. Can I address? I don't want to be difficult, but this is Parliament, and this committee is here to oversight government. And the DG, when he makes a presentation, he does that in his capacity as the DG of the department. He's a government employee, a government official. So he talks in that capacity as a government official, not as an official of the ruling party or the ANC. So there's a fine distinction, but there is a distinction. So I just want us to be technically correct. It may happen to be the ruling party's policy, that's correct, because they're in government, but we are now talking about the government in this capacity. That's the hat he's wearing now.
Thank you, Chair.
Can I just say that, because I would have thought that the DG, in that paragraph, if you read it very clear, he says what the government's term priorities are emanating from a ruling party's point of view. He's taking that effect. He's not saying it's the ruling party's 10-point plan. Let's read just closely the two sentences. Because he's not saying it's the ruling party's, he speak about government, but gives background to that. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, thank you. All we're trying to do in the slide show is just to explain the hierarchy of where the priorities come from, but we're not going to delve into, yes, the activities and programs of the ruling party. Just making sure that members understand the MDGs that are out there, what the world has decided, what the party has done, but what government is doing is what we're going to be focusing on. So these priorities have now been translated, Chair, into the test outcomes in government. So when we're talking about a program of action, a government program of action, we're talking about the test outcomes that have been identified. So most of the departments or clusters, when they come to Parliament, you will see that they will be referring to the test outcomes that have been approved. The outcome test in particular is what the cluster, the GNA cluster, is actually focusing on. So our activities largely will be coming to you in the form of the outcomes that we'll be presenting to you. The coordination of the compilation of the report on MDGs has been assigned to SET South Africa, so they coordinate the input from the different departments and clusters, but importantly, as we said last time, also getting input from civil society, because the country reports that are eventually produced are not just government reports, but they're country reports, so civil society is also given an input to say this is how they see government implementing the MDGs. So that's how the process happens. And the SET-SA has assigned a number of departments to coordinate information on particular MDGs so that information is properly coordinated and collated. But the SET-SA's role is simply to coordinate and compile the country report. The last point is particularly important, Chair. It basically says the GNA cluster contributes to the realization of the following MDG goals, that is MDG 1, 3, 6, and 8. It does not mean that we have nothing to do with the other MDGs, but the bulk of our activities pertain to MDG 1, which is the eradication of extreme poverty and hunger, MDG 3, promotion of gender equality and empowerment of women, MDG 6, combating HIV and AIDS, malaria, and other diseases, MDG 8, developing a global partnership for development. So, when you're looking at the MDGs and you're trying to find the cluster's role, it will just be easier for you to focus on those four MDGs. And that's essentially the structure of our report. But again, for easy reference, Chair, because this situation could be very confusing, we just thought it to be important for us to present this thing in a tabular form so that by just looking at the following slides, you will see these linkages. MDG goals, cluster outcomes, cluster outputs, sub-outputs, linkages to the MDGs, and then the responsible department. So if a member of parliament wants to see the the link between an outcome and output and the MDGs, this will be a very useful slide. And if you want to know which departments are relevant, you will actually look at this slide, and it will actually assist you to understand or get the information that you require. So, same again, if you look at the MGSF outcome 12, the key activities there, will outline them, will tell you what are the outputs, what are the sub-outputs, linkages to MDGs, again, responsible departments. So this is just for members' background information. We don't need to read each and every sentence point made in this slide. This one also, again, linkages between the GNA cluster, program of action, and MDGs. So the purpose of the slide, of this table, basically, again, to assist you to try and put everything together. So that when you're looking at the MGSF outcome, you can link that to a cluster output, to a sub-output, to MDG particular goals, and you'll also see which departments are responsible for those activities. So it's just to assist you with your work members to make sure that you can get the information. As I'm getting closer to the mid, this is the slide, and Chair, we could actually conclude the presentation at this point, because this is where we tell you the cluster programs as far as supporting the MDGs are concerned. So we've got the MDG goal, which is the top block on your left, eradicate extreme poverty and hunger. We then say these are the relevant programs, CDW program, anti-corruption, results-based monitoring and evaluation, promoting gender equality and empowerment of women. These are the activities within government. A quota of 50% has been set for the employment of women in the SMS. SMS, as members would know, would be your senior management service. Interventionist policies and programs that are in place to promote gender equality. Those are activities that will be covered in that. Developing global partnership for development, cluster activities in with regard to this particular goal would be our activities in IFSA, OECD, UNCAC, APRM. Moving to combating HIV and AIDS, these are the cluster activities. Implementing HIV management policy, HIV AIDS mainstreaming guidelines, training HIV on HIV AIDS and mainstreaming. So these are the activities of the cluster. What you will also get is that when other parliamentary clusters are meeting, other clusters will then tell you what their activities are as far as the MDGs are concerned. For instance, combating HIV and AIDS, the social cluster will come to Parliament and give you the greater detail of what are the cluster activities as far as meeting this MDG goal is concerned. So what we are telling is the GNA cluster, but other clusters will be involved in the actual implementation of HIV-AIDS programs. But what we do in this presentation is to just try and give you a little bit more detail about what has actually happened. So again, just to give you some more details, we're zooming in now to those activities, cluster activities pertaining to the MDG goal. So at the top, MDG goal, one which is eradicating extreme poverty and hunger. What we did was to pick up those cross-cutting programs throughout government and in a lot of the cluster activities, and we just tell you some of the activities there. And I'm not going to read all of those bullets for you. What I'll talk about is the sixth point towards the end of the slide. What we basically highlighting here are those social cluster and GNA cluster programs that we're implementing, which in our view are cross-cutting. They're not just for specific departments, specific cluster, but we believe that they are working towards the eradication of extreme poverty and hunger in the country. And key among those, we mentioned three, which is the Community Development Workers Program, the fight against corruption, and results-based monitoring and evaluation. And the subsequent slides will just give you some highlights of the activities that have taken place in this regard. The last bullet will say that the trust also provides support, policy and legislative support to the work of government to just make sure that the MDGs are implemented. And we do this in partnership with, for instance, National Treasury and COPTA in particular, to just make sure that there are frameworks that are put in place to make sure that the work of government is expedited and also contributes towards the eradication of extreme poverty and hunger. So we don't go into details here, Chair, and again, I'm not going to read each and every sentence. What we do here is to just give you one program, which is community development workers, and how that program, how does it contribute towards eradication of poverty. So we tell you how this program works in this slide. For example, the community development workers are organized throughout the country. What they do is to identify poor households and begin to compile profiles of the poorest of the poor households in various parts of the country and begin to assist those households by linking them with government services that exist. So you might find that there's a particular house or households in a particular rural area, they are experiencing extreme poverty and hunger, but they don't even know what services they require. So the community development workers will go there, identify them, put together a profile, tell them what government programs exist, and begin to ensure that there's a link between a particular government program with that particular household. So it's an important program. It's actually being spearheaded by the Deputy President's office. So it's an important program that we believe will contribute towards eradicating poverty. So we give numbers about, we give examples, for instance, that CDWs in all 9 provinces are participating in profiling households that are vulnerable. We give an example, for instance, in the Free State, that between the period January 2011 to March 2011, 18,000 households in 69 municipalities were profiled. In the Western Cape, the Wizenbeck, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Wizenbeck municipal area has also been profiled. In the Northwest, 5 municipal wards have been actually been profiled. So this is just an example, Chair, of what these community development workers are actually producing. So the cluster is involved in making sure that there's a proper framework for these CDWs to be properly employed, to be given the necessary skills, and in terms of actual programs and activities, that is then done by the social cluster. Another key activity of the community development workers is
sorry,
actually sir. Supporting. Yeah.
Sorry, sir. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. That is the slide that you have just passed.
Yeah.
The last line is not clear both on this document or hard copy in the all CDWs and the last sentence. You are trying to read exactly. Sorry, sir.
We'll give you a clear copy, but do you want me to read it for you?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll try and fix it and give you a real copy. But what it say, all CDWs, a total of 3,100, are linking vulnerable households to relevant government departments and are monitoring progress regarding delivery and through door-to-door engagement. They are helping people with access to social grants, registration of ID, and birth certificates. But the key point, Chair, that one is making here, the slide goes into detail. The key point is that what the CDWs basically do is to go to a community, identify poor households, compile a profile, and then link the households to the specific programs in government. So what the cluster does is to provide the framework, make sure that they are employed. Then there's also a process of monitoring what happens to those particular households. So this is not just a GNA cluster activity, but it also involves the social cluster. So it's essentially creating a situation where the country will have a list or a profile of all poor households in the country who will know what sort of services they are getting, accessing at the moment, will know what services they require. For instance, there could be somebody who's totally disabled but not accessing social grants. So that information will be in our database, and it will actually assist government to make sure that we can reach out to those communities. So we just give a little bit more details, Chair. But as we say, a lot of the detail of what exactly do these people do on the ground, the social cluster is actually running with it. Our job is to provide the framework, provide the support, and make sure that the program is actually happening. It's the same principle with regard to the early childhood development program, largely a program of the social cluster, it identifies children who require ECD programs but are not accessing it. It links them with these centers and ensures that they have access to government programs such as immunization, administration of ARVs. I mean, important things. Poor communities may not know that they require or that ARVs are available in a particular locality, so we'll establish the link. So that's basically the principle we're making here. And everything else in this slide is just a bit of detail about what actually happens on the ground. So in some cases, the CDWs, for instance, will mobilize communities to participate in activities such as budget planning, integrated planning at municipal level, and they're also involved in national HIV/AIDS awareness campaigns. So these are field workers that have been employed by government to make sure that the poorest of the poor can gain access to government programs. We think that the fight against corruption is also contributing to what's eradicating extreme poverty and hunger. We see it as a cost-cutting program, because it's essentially about stopping the plundering of state resources and making sure that these resources are directed towards fighting hunger and poverty in the country. So as we fight against corruption, we're saving state money so that this money can actually be available to support communities. So we again give you concrete steps that are currently taking place within government. For example, we set up the Special Anti-Corruption Unit, which was established in 25 November 2010. Its job is to investigate corruption and conduct disciplinary action processes in the public sector. And the idea is also to try and speed up the process to make sure that those who are involved in corruption are dealt with as speedily as possible. Local government has established the anti-corruption inspectorate units for municipalities. We also have a multi-agency working group that was established to investigate corruption in the procurement. So different units exist within government, so we've put together this multi-agency working group so that people can begin to share information, coordinate their work to make sure that we can increase our fight against corruption. There's also an anti-corruption task team which was established to coordinate the work of all the law enforcement agencies and watchdog bodies. Because the idea basically was that, you know, there are too many points in government that are engaging the fight against corruption, but they're not sharing information, they're not coordinating, they're not working together. Hence, our fight against corruption is actually, the impact of that is not as great as it could be if we're coordinating our efforts. So all of this coordination, we believe, is going to yield results. There's also an interministerial committee that was established to ensure coordination among different agencies and departments at the ministerial level to make sure that there's also political direction given to ensure that the fight is accelerated. So again, I mean, I can mention the IMFS, which is the Integrated Financial Management System, which is being developed, which will include information on corruption and also help government to better manage financial disclosures, as an example. So all of that information will be online. Government also signed with business an agreement in 2009 to implement anti-corruption programs, because our view of government was that the fight against corruption should not be seen as just a government thing. It involves everybody, and it's also involving the private sector. So there's a need for some understanding to reach between government and business to ensure that the fight against corruption is coordinated at various levels. Further activity is making sure that we have what we call results-based monitoring and evaluation. The MDGs reflect a new emphasis on results and outcome. And as you know, we've told you, the government POA is now actually moving towards becoming an outcome-based also program of action to make sure that as we're putting in resources to achieve particular goals, we know what sort of outcomes we're seeking, and we can also begin to monitor that amount of work. And we believe that the fight against extreme poverty and hunger cannot just be a general fight. It needs to be focused, it needs to be specific, but most importantly, you need to make sure that there are measures in place to monitor what you're doing. Are you achieving those goals? Are you achieving those outcomes? And the cluster is currently working with the presidency to the cell phone interrupted the trend there. The creation of the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation in the presidency, we believe that it will actually increase government's capacity to monitor whether we are on track in meeting our goals. Moving on to goal number three, which is promoting gender equality and empowerment of women. Chair, a lot of work is being done in this regard. We've got a white paper which was finalized in 1995. We've got a white paper on affirmative action. We've got the Employment Equity Act, 98. a lot of work is already happening in a lot of government departments to ensure that we address gender equality issues, but also focusing on disabilities and target groups in our employment practices as government. So we believe that a lot of work has been done. Policy frameworks, strategies and programs are already in place, so we believe that in fact we are indeed making progress. In the public service, our primary concern has been overseeing the implementation of the following two indicators. There are others, but we just thought we mentioned two. And the first one being the performance in relation to the meeting of the gender quota of 50% representation at SMS level. The original quota was 30%, but now we've moved to, government has moved to 50% target. We'll say a little bit more on that one later. The next indicator is introducing corrective interventions that are targeted at supporting women, such as policies, strategies, and programs, including capacity development programs. The establishment of the Ministry for Women, Children, and Persons with Disability, in our view, was a major contribution to mainstreaming of gender equality and women empowerment in the public service. So these are just things that have taken place. This slide, very quickly, we showed it to members last week, but just it's an indication that as far as the female representation in the public service, especially at SMS level, as of September 2010, we were sitting at 36.6% females at that level, clearly below the 50% target, but remember that the original target was 30%. So the provincial and national governments put together were sitting at 36% at this particular point in time, but we believe that in fact measures are in place to ensure that we move towards the 50% target. Again, very briefly, Chair, I'm on the floor now already for 40 minutes, so I'm going to try and increase the pace. Gender equality strategic framework for the public service already in place. Employment equity guide for the public service in place. Job access strategy for recruitment. Employment and retention of persons with disabilities already in place. The public service youth development guidelines are being developed as we speak, and we think that we're making progress. Adoption of the head of department's 8th principal action plan for promoting women's empowerment and gender equality in the workplace already in place. So, Chair, we've distributed a one pager which just gives you the 8th principal action plan. So it's been distributed. We don't need to spend time on it. Some key activities that have taken place. Public Service Women Management Week project has already been started. Public Service Women's Managers Forum already put in place. It's already happening. Palama has developed unit standards on gender mainstreaming and training. A public service gender endeavor was held in 2008. GEMS has adopted gender bias risk management strategy. So again, that slide just gives you more activities, more examples of what we're doing. So I don't need to read that for members. But again, seventh bullet, we explained that we may be sitting at 36% as far as the SMS positions are concerned, but it's because the target has changed from 30 to 50%. But we believe that the current policy framework will actually enable government to move closer towards meeting the 50% target. HIV, combating HIV, AIDS, malaria, and other diseases. Again, a classical example, Chair, of what the social cluster, when it comes to parliament, it will give you more details of government activities as far as the fight against HIV, AIDS, malaria, and other diseases. And one of the officials who's with us here can actually give you more details about the cluster's activities. But government has developed a 10-point plan of the health sector for the period 2009 to 2014, which is basically aimed at strengthening our ability to meet the health-related MDGs. All these interventions are happening within the context of this plan. So we are making a contribution as the GNA cluster and CPSA, but the main activity and program in this regard will be explained to Parliament when the social cluster comes in and does its presentation here. Again, these are just some of the activities that if you look at the social cluster report, you'll see details on all of these activities. Example, scaling up of the implementation of the voluntary counseling and testing process, that's on track, it's happening. And again, the cluster will give you details, distribution of condoms, increasing the provision of ARVs and therapy, all of that work is happening. So we believe that, in fact, as a country, we are indeed making tremendous progress as far as achieving this goal is concerned. Again, examples of activities that are taking place, and the cluster is also involved together with the social cluster. And the reason why I'm not spending too much detail on this one, Chair, is because it's one of those goals that the social cluster is the lead cluster. So we'll just indicate some of the activities that we are involved in as the GNA cluster. So provincial workshops being conducted on the implementation of the HIV and AIDS and TB management policy for the whole public service. So when it comes to implementing a policy for the whole public service, the GNA cluster will become involved and will essentially drive the process as part of as part of implementing the MDGs. One other addition that you will give in the updated document is we've also included the HIV and AIDS and TB management policy for the public service, which has been finalized and is being mainstreamed throughout the government system. So it's an additional activity that we're doing. Drive or lead cluster, social cluster, but we are making a contribution by making sure that whatever policies are being designed by the cluster for the nation, we then translate those policies and implement them for the public service as a whole. So that's the link, Chair, we're trying to make here. Concrete examples that we've done in this regard is the cluster. By March 2010, 308 managers and practitioners from all provinces received training on HIV and AIDS. So again, a list of activities that we involved in to support the country's activities with regard to combating and fighting HIV, AIDS, malaria, and other diseases. Moving on to MDG Goal 8, which is essentially about developing global partnerships for development. We participate in the following activities or programs to fulfill the goal of achieving global partnership for development. We're part of the IPSA Trilateral Consultative Forum as a cluster, and combating bribery of foreign public officials in international business transactions, which is a project of the OECD, the UN Convention Against Corruption, and the implementation of the APRM process. So as a cluster led by DPSA in this regard, we are quite active in all of these multilateral fora to make sure that we as a country can participate in these global partnership activities. So again, we make the same point. These are the kinds of activities that we were involved in as a cluster. And again, Chair, I don't need to read this. We just begin to go into details about what activities are included in that particular goal. I'm moving towards conclusion. I can promise members. I've been going now for about 45 minutes. The IPSA Trilateral Consultative Forum, again, will give you examples of sessions that have taken place meetings that have taken place that were hosted by IFSA, either in South Africa or other IFSA countries, working group activities. So we were integrally involved in those activities. The Ministerial Commission is essentially a forum for ministers of foreign affairs from the three IFSA countries who meet with their senior officials to just make sure that we monitor progress and the IFSA countries' participation in achieving this particular goal. So these are just, again, examples of things that we are doing. As far as Brotherhood of Public Officials is concerned, that initiative of the EOCD, South Africa is one of the country members that accredited to the convention. We acceded to the convention on the 18th of August. Again, we don't need to say too much on this one because Parliament also approved that South Africa can participate in this initiative. So assumption being that Parliament is fully briefed on that one. In terms of phase one of the EOCD evaluation, the OECD considers that overall South Africa's legislation conforms to the standards that were set in the convention. So this is OECD view in its recent report that they think that we're conforming to the standards. And then the phase two evaluation of OECD, South Africa has not yet recorded any convictions for the offense of bribery of foreign public officials in the context of the international business transactions. But however, there are four cases potentially involving foreign bribery which are under preliminary investigation. So I'm sure my team can give more details on that. The UN Convention Against Corruption, again, proudly we can say that South Africa was one of the countries to ratify the UN Convention Against Corruption, and we comply with the main mandatory requirements of the UN Convention. The requirements include setting up strong institutional capacity to implement the various pieces of anti-corruption legislation and policy frameworks. Institutions with responsibility to fight corruption include the following, we don't need to read them, and again, earlier on in the presentation, we gave you details of additional structures that we've put in place to strengthen our fight against corruption. We've taken part in various sessions of the UN Conference of State Parties on the fight against corruption. We also participate in three working groups of the UN Convention Against Corruption, which was set up by the Conference of State Parties, namely the Asset Recovery, Prevention and Implementation Review Working Group, so we're part of that. We will undergo a review by the UN in the year 2011. APRM, again, members are fully aware of the activities in this regard, so we just give you, details of activities as far as that is concerned. We see NEPAD as one of the avenues that the continent uses to attain the MDG goals. One of the key aspects of NEPAD is the APRM mechanism, which the various member countries of the AU use to evaluate each other's commitment to promote democracy and human rights. The Minister of Public Service and Administration is a focal point and plays an important role in the APRM process. So country reports are presented by the President, but the cluster and the Minister in particular assist in that whole process to make sure that we are able to present a report to that process. We also participate and contribute to the Conference of African Ministers of Public Service to share our experiences on public administration. I hope we didn't cut anything there. That is fine. Yeah. So in conclusion, Chair, it's a lot of information to try and squeeze into a 20-minute presentation. But in conclusion, the implementation of the MDG we see as a national program that essentially aimed at making sure that the country achieves the MDGs. But as we said, STEPSA is playing a key coordination role, especially with regard to the compilation of the reports that are submitted to the UN. Both government departments and civil society are involved in ensuring the realization of the goals. who's taking an interventionist policy and programs of seek to address the MDGs, and we believe that significant progress has been made in this regard. And as a cluster, we think that we are making a contribution, although I think scope still exists for greater coordination at that level. There's, however, a need to tighten accountability for both implementation and monitoring of MDGs, not just within the cluster, but within departments, but across the various clusters. There may just be a need for a clear national plan with achievable targets and indicators, including coherent institutional frameworks to improve both implementation and reporting. But at this particular point in time, Chair, we think that the cluster is indeed making a contribution towards attainment of the MDG goals. With these very few words, Chair, we thank you and the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister and DG, about the presentation. Members, I'm going to put this for discussion. If the areas that you want to talk about, I have noted few, but let's hear. It might come up from the issues that you're going to raise. There's one hand that I see. Honourable Williams, can you proceed?
The area I'd like to look at is the cross-cutting programs, in particular the CDWs program. In general, CDWs are under-resourced, and also on the ground there's uncertainty about who they report to, if it's the municipality, and you know there seems to be uncertainty. And I'd just like to know if that, because we raised this last year, if that has been addressed. The second point I'd like to know is the CDWs are the link between government services and fundamentally the poorest of the poor in South Africa. Now, I'd like to know, where are these government services if not in Tucson centres? For instance, if you're in Emzononi in Mpumalanga, the closest Tucson centre is about 40 kilometres away. So the CDW has to link you with, say, one of the government services. But my real question is not Tucson service centres a part of this cross-cutting programs as well? Because without the Tucson service centres, the CDWs are basically alone, and it will be very difficult for government departments to have a point where they can actually get to the ground. So I think that the Tucson centres should be part of the CDWs program as well, and they work very closely together. Yeah, thank you, Chairman.
Any other hands but just emphasize the issue of the CDWs, because we have been interacting with the department, and the issue of CDWs is not resolved at this point in time, and it is coming out from the presentation. I think part of the issues that did come up, at some point there was an involvement of JIS, there was COFTA, there was public citizen administration through the deputy minister by then, and it was re-engaging this discussion. There was no clear direction. So I therefore understand and agree with that point raised by Honourable Williams, because if it's part of areas that are identified, and in terms of the discussions that we've been carrying with the department, it was still unclear, and we're still awaiting that we get a proper response. Is it resolved? Who pays? Who runs it? And so on. And therefore, if it's part of the report, I would really request the department to provide clarity to know if at some point there was clear direction. The next hand was Honourable Suka.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to appreciate the presentation by the Ministry and the DG. To repeat this presentation, I think it assists us also to assimilate it and internalize it as to towards the direction of government, what it thinks. Chairperson, I will not repeat what has been raised, even your concern around the CDWs, because there are areas where they are working very well, and then there are those areas that they are not doing very well. And I think we can bear testimony when we've got our constituencies. I know we've made some great strides in certain areas, but in little towns, I think they need some tools to be assisted, especially in the Karoo area where I normally visit. they need to be assisted. But in the metro, where I come from, PE, they've been doing quite a sterling work in certain wards and so on. Chairperson, I'll be a little bit general on these matters. On the APRM, I think as government we have not yet, we're a bit slow on that one, APRM process. It did come very strong when it was launched, and we could not sustain that very well. I'm not sure whether it's due to the coordination of it, especially at provincial level. We need to do some little work on the APRM process, you know, equally to the coordination of the MDGs. For instance, where I come from, where I stand from the Eastern Cape province, I know that we were very vocal about the MDGs to say to what extent are you pushing hard so that you assist the government at the national level to move about this matter. So we need to have a kind of a sustainable program, especially if we want to achieve our objectives 2015 on the matter. And we need to talk a little bit more. I'm not sure who's talking about this issue to conscientize and monitor our departments throughout the country, not necessarily here at this level. So we need that kind of situation. I know also that the MDG processes are being categorized according to clusters. I would wish that if it was my way that we have a unit that is dedicated to check on the progress so that we don't fall short or behind in terms of the progress report. Because if it's done and coordinated by this department at this level, surely we will not be able to achieve our objectives. So I'm not sure whether we can't think of a unit that will be dedicated, especially to push also at the other spheres of government, this issue of monitoring the progress thereof, so that also you can go physically through that unit to check really is this happening, especially when you talk of eradicating poverty and so on. Because this is a very important program if you want to be on top of the issues. Just as in my last thing, because I was trying to check more on what has been raised on page 9, especially this issue of the eradicating extreme poverty and hunger. Because I'm trying to find a synergy between this thing of job losses, the unemployment, vis-a-vis the statement by the president on our focus for creation. And you see also this unit now will be able to monitor that. There is the national department that has been just been created, that is being led by the minister, Trevor and Collins. I'm not sure they are in line with the constitution in terms of now that they've been, our departments have been increased, so that we give them this to monitor the real work at that level in creating these jobs so as to eradicate and deal with the poverty levels in the country. So I'm saying we needed to check on that. Maybe for recommendations also as a committee or a cluster, I will make that at an opportune time when we make a report in terms of this committee's visit to the various provinces and institutions to check whether is there any real progress as against the paperwork that they are pushing for a report, the progress report. Otherwise, Chairperson, I'm happy with the report. That's what. Thank you.
Okay. Honourable Dreyer. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, it's indeed a very comprehensive and interesting presentation with lots of facts, and some of them are very concerning. You know, in some areas we've made good progress as a country, and that's commendable, and other areas we've just kind of maintained where we were. What of concern is in some areas we've actually gone backward compared to, you know, the goals of what we want to achieve. And that's, of course, reason for concern, and that's what we have to address. But now, my question is really, instead of looking at small detail and specifics, isn't it important to look at the big picture of economic development? Now look at all these goals, you know, achieve universal primary education, eradicate extreme poverty and hunger, reduce child mortality. All of these things you find when countries are developing, and the developed countries, these issues are not issues. they've all been eradicated, all these goals have been achieved. These are problems of underdeveloped or slowly developing countries. But in developed countries, these problems have been resolved and these issues don't exist anymore. So shouldn't we put more emphasis on economic growth to make sure that we've got massive economic growth as a country, and in the kind of style of a rising tide will lift all, then that's the way that we will find that all these issues are addressed as consequences of economic growth, as we've seen in internationally in the rest of the world. So I'd like to hear the minister's comment on the emphasis on and the role of economic growth.
Okay. Just to emphasize that, of course, on the point that was also raised by Honorable Suka, the minister did want to give a bit of a brief on the APRM. So I think just to take it on board, but he also really indicated that we'll just quite briefly zoom into that area, even prior to the question. So it will, I'm sure it will be addressed, Minister, along that. Honorable Maluleke.
Thank you, Chair. I think this report, Chair, if the Honorable Dreyer can go to the public with it, they will see how far the government has done their work. Chair, on the issue of community development workers, I think we have also talked about it because it's a challenging. If you can look at this issue of immunization, we have done a lot because they go to the people, they go direct to the preschools and go to where community are. So if we can maybe strengthen the work of the CDWs because they go where people are, door to door, we can also maybe get a good report on how many people we have who are in poverty. So we need to resource the CDWs because they are doing a good job. Also, Chair, on the issue of I was going to talk also on the issue of where they say to identify the under 12 who are not in school. Also on the part of the CDW, they can do that work if they have people who are monitoring them, and also if they know where to report to, because also this is a challenge because they don't know where they report to. Sometimes they are in the municipality, in the office of the premier, they don't know where they report to. So I think, Chair, if they can have an office where they report to, can have a good report on how many children we have in South Africa. Otherwise, we appreciate the report, Chair. Thanks.
You want to ask again on this? Yeah, but just to emphasize that also, other clusters are going to touch on areas that are not actually dwelt into. For instance, take governance and administration, therefore focuses on that. We can get a bit of good detail when we focus on the economic cluster, and the three other clusters will actually zoom into those areas again. Of course, it's quite a good oversight to evaluate how far are we actually moving in terms of the economy particular. Honorable Suka, okay, let me start with Honorable Mahali, you will follow.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to add on what Honorable Williams has said about the Tucson Service Centers. The other issue on the Tucson Service Centers is what services are we getting there? Are we getting the services that we are expecting to get there, or you'll get only maybe Home Affairs once a week or twice a week? Because we are, our expectation, or the CDWs will send someone to the Tucson Service Centers with the expectations that they'll get whatever services, different departments will be there, but then there'll only be one department, or that day no one will be at the Tucson Service Centers. And also, like, the building that they are using, where do these buildings belong to? Is it a constituency office of the ANC? Or is it a constituency office of the DA? Or where are we going to get these services? I think we should also follow up on that. And the network at the Tucson Civic Center, because you usually you find that they'll tell you that there are no network cables here, we can't process 1, 2, 3. I think that we need to follow up on that. The other issue is on the Special Anti-Corruption Unit. And I'm happy here they are saying that local government established the Anti-Corruption Inspectorate Unit for municipalities. I think that is a very good move, because we would like to see corruption, we would like to see an improvement in with relation to corruption, where there will be zero corruption in our municipalities. And this is a very good move that our government is doing. And the other thing is, they are saying here there's a multi-agency working group to investigate corruption in procurement. And I think as this committee will be happy to receive reports to say what is happening with this multi-agency working group. Are we seeing any progress? Because we can't keep on having these groups and no progress report and so on. And thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Suka.
Chairperson, my small issue here would be that, look, this is a report, you understand it quite well. Maybe the weakness, not unless I'm ignorant, just to highlight those challenges where we could not overcome immediately that we want to achieve. What are the obstacles and the challenges that we face as a country? So that moving forward in the next report, at least we are able to assist where it is needed. Because we need also, the report must provoke us to give us some challenges, go back to where you come and assist the process and bring reports, so that when we meet in the cluster for in preparation for this report, we should be able to say these challenges that you've identified, I think these are possible solutions in addition over and above what we are doing. The second issue, Chairperson, I would want also to see some fruits moving forward, especially when we talk of on that page that talks of fighting corruption. You know, there are too many of these structures that are established, and to the extent that it will deflate our intended outcome when it comes to be that, we must be hard. You see, if we in that page alone, you've got about four a common word there, we established. It appears more than three times in the same page. So it means then that we need to try and streamline and do some tangible work, because in your outcome, as where you South Africa is part of the UN on the combating crime, I saw in the yesterday, I think some work has been done where some interception was done about the notes and the tobacco that was found in one of the provinces. That convention against corruption or fraud. I think South Africa has done something, I've seen it day before yesterday, if not yesterday, on TV. But I think we need to, as a country, to be more vigilant and to talk about this matter with substantive issues to assist the process, so that we are seen as people who are real fighting this crime. I know there are four preliminary investigations that have been raised here, but I think we need to move a little bit step faster than what we are doing. Otherwise, if we gloss over crime and corruption, we will not be credited as a good country when it comes to governance. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Suka. Honourable Dreyer.
Madam Chair, yes, my question actually flows from Member Suka's comments and question. I'm also on that fight against corruption. When the DG presented, he emphasized all these various agencies and work groups and committees and so on, but he said that the impact was not as great as it could be. And that is the problem. I think that's what Member Suka is alluding to. And my question is, why not? In spite of all these committees and working groups and strategic teams and so on, why did we not achieve the desired effect?
Thank you, Honourable Mahal, again.
Chairperson, maybe another thing flowing from what during the introduction by the minister, because he said we set ourselves target in the country. My worry is we don't want to be seen to be moving as government, because these are the target of the country. But the private sector, we don't see any movement. We will come with the Employment Equity Act with whatever policies. Do we have a line where we will say, as the public sector, we meet here with the private sector for the implementation of the DG, the MDG? Okay, thank you.
Thanks, honourable member. Can I request the minister to respond?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Will I come at the end? I want to call the team to pick up on some of the issues. Time permitting, we can also talk slightly about the HRM as well as what. If the chair agrees with that approach.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister, Deputy Minister, members, and thank you for the questions. The point about CDWs, I think, came through from a number of members, and all of the comments are quite valid, very important, and I think it's something that we need to look at as government. The issues that have been raised about reporting lines, resourcing of CDWs, these are all important issues, and I think that we could try and find a way of compiling a report for the committee and present it here, and I'm sure that the minister may want to just put some more flesh into that, to just say what is the clear direction as far as the future and reporting lines of CDWs. But I mean, the most important thing about CDWs is that they constitute an important link between government and the people, and I would agree that they are not sufficiently resourced to perform the role that they are supposed to be performing. But I mean, increasingly, you may want to see a situation or a state in which more resources are put into CDWs than into beefing up the bureaucracy in offices, because ultimately, I think that a minister can express a stronger view on this one. They essentially constitute the first line of contact. They should constitute the first line of contact between government and the people, especially the poorest of the poor. Those of us who have jobs can drive or take a bus or take it to a government department and get services. But the poorest of the poor, who find themselves, especially in the remotest part of the country, in informal settlements, those are the people who actually need to see government coming to them to provide services. So I think the concept of CDWs is probably one of the most important innovations that we've introduced as government. What further resources need to be given to them? I think that is something we need to look at. Their link with the Tsong Service Centers, and a number of members have raised that one. Tsong Service Centers constitute an important one-stop shop service for communities, again targeting rural areas and remote areas. So these centers are basically an attempt by government to take services to the people, and it's part of what, in some quarters, you'll hear the word in government used as an access strategy. In other words, what is the most effective way of providing services to communities? So centers are there, departments come and provide services, but citizens still have to come to these centers and access services. So they are part of government's access strategy, taking services to communities, but again, I think that it's something that we can look at strengthening, because it's not all government, it's only certain departments that provide services there. In most cases, most departments don't provide services on a day-to-day basis. For instance, you'll find in one center, Home Affairs will come, they will provide services from 8 to 1 o'clock on Mondays, Wednesdays and Thursdays. And another department, Social Development, will come on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So it's those kinds of things that are happening. But services are happening, and I think in 16 years as government, I think we've made some great progress in terms of increasing access, but I mean, we would be, as government, the first to go out there and say we still need to do more to improve access and link between the people and government. I want to link this to the member's question about who do these offices belong to. The strong services centers, they used to be called multi-people centers. It's a project that emanated from Department of Public Works. It migrated to GCIS, and I think that it's in the stage of migrating to DPSA or something to that effect. They are government institutions, so political parties do not have offices there. There will not be constituency offices, and I think it was a conscious decision that these centers must be seen as government centers, not as party political centers. So in all the communities, the party will have an office two streets away, away from the Tsong services. And that's because when people come to government, the understanding has always been that they must go to this office to seek government, not to seek any political party. But the structure still needs to be relooked at, because in some cases, the Tsong service centers are managed by a municipality, in others by a premier's office, and in some cases even by a Department of Public Works and whatnot. So over the past few years, a lot of work has actually been done to begin to decide whose responsibility is it to run these Tsong centers. Challenge is that the Tsong centers are in a community, but the services provided in the Tsong center are actually national services to a very large extent, and some provincial services. So you find that the municipality would not actually have any services in that kind of area. So you get into an area of the different spheres of government, et cetera, et cetera. So over the past, I think, 18 months, there was an attempt to explore the possibility of doing a project of having these centers to be completely integrated, where you have municipality, provincial, and national government services provided from one center. It's a nightmare, Chair, because you've got national department, province, and local government, all of them governed by different legislation, frameworks, and all of those kinds of things. So I think a bit of work still needs to be done. An evaluation has been conducted by National Treasury's Technical Assistance Unit, and they found some interesting things there. So I think we can look at the report and see what could be the next phase of the Tsong Service Center. The original goal was to have a Tsong Service Center for each and every municipality in the country, and ultimately transfer these functions to a municipality. But again, center run by a municipality by providing national and provincial services, it's an administrative nightmare, but not impossible to solve. So we share the view that they could be part of taking services to communities. APRM, listening to the chair, the minister, I'm sure, may say one or two things on the APRM. As far as job losses and unemployment, Member Suka's point about monitoring whether we are indeed creating jobs. I think that the monitoring and evaluation ministry in the presidency, together with DPSA, and we're trying to integrate this into the work of the cluster, we believe that it's essential for government to begin to monitor what we are doing. So when the president stands up in parliament and says, I will do the following things, I will create so many jobs, we got to make sure that there are mechanisms to monitor government's delivery or performance against the goals that have been set. Member Greer's points about progress, I think those were comments, and we welcome those, and accept the point that we got to look at, if we want to achieve the MDG goals, Member Dreyer, economic growth is obviously an important part of that, because a lot of the things we government wants to do have a lot to do with the resources that are available to the state, and what the state has at its disposal in the form of resources is directly linked to the growth of the economy. If the economy shrinks, it limits the country's ability to have enough resources to do for government to do what it needs to do. But again, to accepting that general point, when the economic cluster does a presentation, they can begin to deal with the macro economic issues to see what government is doing to grow the economy in order to be able to meet the needs that exist on the ground. So we are accepting that there is a link between economic growth and achievement of the MDG goals. Member Mamuleke's point about CDWs, yes, again, comments, Chair. They are indeed doing good work as far as immunization and getting information about the needs of communities, especially poor households in various parts of the country. But again, she's making the point they need to be capacitated. And as I said earlier on, we're acceding to that. It's something that we need to look at about how to strengthen the hand of MDW, CDWs to make sure that their role can be improved. What services are provided in the Chisong Service Centers? As I said, different centers will have different services provided. We do some kind of assessment to identify what are the most urgent services required by a particular community that is serviced by a Chisong Service Center. So you'll find that different services are provided by different Chisong Service Centers. But your most basic services that we've agreed have to be provided by all Chisong Service Centers will be, for example, home affairs activities such as application for birth certificates, application for IDs, application for passports, all of those basic things that ordinary poor citizens would have to spend days traveling to look for those services. So home affairs is actually one of the key departments providing services. The second department, key department, is the Department of Social Development, assisting communities with applications for social grants and all those social development activities. So that's a standard almost service. The labor department also does provide a lot of services. The labor, I think they have what they call the local centers, labor centers, or what? Labor centers, yes, provided. But other departments will come on particular days to a Chisong Service Center. So it's something that maybe we can look at standardizing in the future. I've answered your question earlier on about who do they report to? The multi-agency working group on corruption, is the working group making progress? I think we are making progress, Chair. Let me just restate the point I was making earlier on. The individual units, anti-corruption units, are doing a lot of good work. You need to open newspapers and you'll find that, in fact, action is being taken against this and that person involved in corruption. The point I was making, I was saying that the impact could be greater if we could make better. I wasn't saying we're not making an impact. I'm saying individually we're making progress, but the impact could actually be greater if you could make. So that's the point I was trying to make there. So indeed, all these integrated structures, the working group, the technical committees, the multi-agents, all of them are just trying to pull resources together to increase the impact of on the progress we are already making. I think I've covered most of the question, or some of the questions, for most of them. There was a point about challenges. Sorry, unless Minister, can I venture into that one? Well, challenges, obviously, I'll mention the economic growth is obviously the major challenge we're facing as a nation, because if the economy doesn't grow, our ability to fight poverty, to create jobs and do all of these things will be limited. We're not saying that it will not happen, but it will be limited. Obviously, inequality in our community remains a major challenge, but again, a lot of our activities are aimed at addressing that challenge. Unemployment, obviously a big challenge, but we believe that we're doing a lot of work in that regard. The economic cluster can come and give, will come and give a more detailed presentation to Parliament about what government is doing. Major challenge for government is just coordination around a lot of these MDG goals, because, Chair, observation is that clusters are providing individual reports to Parliament, but at some point, I think that government may want to look at all of these reports prior to compilation of the final country report. I think the next one is due in about 2 years' time. Prior to the compilation of that report, the monitoring and evaluation department, DPSA, and all the coordinating ministries, I think I might have to just get together, look at all of these reports presented to Cabinet, and see to what extent are we making an impact and what interventions are required. So, but I think that the issue of coordination is something that we're going to have to look at quite clearly. Increasing the service delivery capacity of government, obviously important, because when we increase our service delivery capacity, especially at local government level, chances are that we'll move quicker towards achieving the MDG targets that have been set. I've already talked about monitoring and evaluation. So those are some of the challenges, but again, there could be others. Thank you, Chair.
Just to only highlight that the only challenge we have, Minister, you do have enough time, but at 5, the workers have to go based on the arrangements of the transport, and we can remain, all of us, but our savings, it's that time. Am I right? Unless if they allow us some extra time.
As long as
Minister, and our students include the officials. But,
Thank you, Minister. Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to add a few things. In looking at the implementation and attaining of goals, there's quite a few errors that have arisen as areas of concern by the United Nations. That some of the difficulties in the implementation of the goals lately is the rise in conflicts both in Africa and the Middle East. So you find budgets shifting. And I'm sure in South Africa, those conflicts then have a negative effect on our fiscus as well, because we see people coming towards South Africa for some peace of mind. The second one is on recession, which has hit all of us, and other countries more than others. But again, it comes to the issue of jobs, and the health of our economy is also gets affected. And the ripple effect of that is that it has a net negative impact on the implementation of some of these MDG goals. But also the natural disasters that have afflicted the continent, which we knew, and they have afflicted us in more ways than one, which also then refocuses some of the energies and monies towards dealing with those problems that had not been budgeted for. One of the issues I think that we need to look at as a parliament and a government is the policies of other countries and the impact that they have on South Africa's social network, but also on South Africa's economy. Because as long as the developed world has a say in some of the emerging countries to the north of South Africa in terms of how they are conducting their business, you find that in some instances, apart from the fact that you do find dictators in Africa, but you also find meddling in the internal affairs of certain countries by multinationals, especially your mining companies, and also governments that have a colonial umbilical cord with some of these countries. And the net effect of that as well is that we feel all of that in terms of the burden on our socio-economic network in South Africa. On sustainable environment, it will always be a problem for the developing world, because for the emerging economies and the third world economies, we are the least polluters of the world, but we bear the brunt of the effects of what is brought to us by developed economies and their refusal then to comply or to submit to protocols of either international bodies or the United Nations itself, like your Kyoto Protocol. But on a lighter note, it's very interesting to note that the two Song Centers project migrates from department to department with the migration of our current DG.
Is that a gift transport is arranged for the workers?
Oh, so there will be no.
No, ma'am.
Okay. Hoping that this migration will at some stage have to stop. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the DM, thanks, DG. And of course, thanks to the colleagues, fellow members of Parliament, for raising the issues as we debate, guided by this presentation that we made this afternoon. the issue of the CDW is a very important issue. The community development workers and the challenges that have been reported here are challenges that talk to the reality of transformation, like when we introduce new structures and stuff like that. You remember that when we came with this issue of CDWs, we were then saying, but what are the CDWs? The community development workers. Are we going to have them as full-time career public servants? Are we going to have them as a line function operators attached to particular levels or spheres of government or lines of departments? And in search of what exactly we'll be calling this CDW, we said there will be and have to be seen more as service delivery activists. Therefore, the question is where does an activist report? Some said these are going to be mobile offices of service delivery. Now the question is, where does a mobile office report to? If you are an individual but you're also called an office, what then are you? Well, then at the point where we'll have resourced this agent of service delivery, it will be possible that this person called a CDW will walk into, with them said, if there will be a door-to-door provision of services. This person will walk into your door and you say, you've got a child who qualify to apply for child support grant, but the systems have been failing you. And this person will simply pull out a laptop and do on-court application. And then it will be possible to actually deal with those things. So that you have services walking into our doors. Now, the responsibility of founding, the responsibility of developing policy, the responsibility of incubating the CDW was placed squarely as a responsibility of the Department of Public Service and Administration. Now, but what you then see, these people operate at local areas. At local areas, you do have municipalities, you do have water. That's why at times you will have CDWs finding themselves at loggerheads with ward councillors. That's why at some areas you will find CDWs finding themselves at loggerheads with a group of workers called Masupatila. That's why at some areas you'll find the CDWs at loggerheads with community development officers. That's why you'll find at some stage the SASA service delivery agents also finding themselves contesting for space with CDWs. Now you then say, what is the difference? The difference between a CDW and a CDO. In terms of what they do, you find that it's actually more or less the same. But a CDO, a community development officer, that there are CDOs, there are CLOs, community initializing officers. Your community liaison officers will be linked, that mostly those people are linked to hospitals. The community development officers will mostly be linked to municipalities. Masupatila, not all provinces that actually came with Masupatila, but these are people who assist people when it comes to issues of services that has to do with social security services. So you have this kind of an arrest. So in some areas, you have ward councillors, or especially the lazy ones. You will have ward councillors complaining that, you know, these CTWs are actually contesting for space. You have cases where a people will then say the CTWs should not be allowed to convene meetings. They have to be done, because once they convene meetings, then they are placing themselves squarely at the level where councillors operate. This is a reality of transformation as you intervene, as you introduce this people. Now, they are there as CDWs. In 2007, this Portfolio Committee of Public Service and Administration created a platform. A platform we refer to as a round table to talk about this issue of the CDW. I remember we're meeting at F12, not F26. We then said, let's look at the CDWs and how they are coordinated. In all other provinces, from province to province, you had a situation where some were coordinating them through the premier's offices, others were coordinating through municipalities, and so on. And we sort of liked the model of Limpopo as a portfolio committee then. I could not participate actively, chairperson, or sitting in a position like we are. I was so worried when people were like sort of liking the model of Limpopo. I was not happy. But why? And the issue was that in those areas they are located in the Pompo, it was the only province where they were located in the premier province. Now, we then said, if you talk in terms of location, but you don't subject these people to a line function a relationship, then it's fine. But if you do that, you are going to defeat the very purpose of the establishment of community development together. So that, as you have indicated, honorable members, you remember that the DPSA and COPTA started a joint project, which concluded about mid last year, led by the Deputy Minister of Public Service and Administration on our part, and then also the Deputy Minister from COPTA side, to then strengthen this thing, because you don't want these people to be absorbed, because if you get them to operate as if they are councillors, they will be subjected to the functional discipline within a minister, within a municipality. And I'm telling you, if that municipality is performing well, that is going to be a characteristic feature of their performance as well. But if it's not performing well, they're going to be like sort of absorbed and be assimilated. You won't actually see a difference between what is happening, but you need these people as community development workers to operate and be coordinated at a level where you then say, this is where we coordinate issues of service delivery. That report is there. We are going to look at the report. I think the commitment we can make our chairperson is that we might want to actually come and talk to them, because it's a detailed information in terms of how best we can utilize this. But whatever we do, ourselves as government and as parliament, is to assist that we maintain the CDWs to do exactly what they are supposed to do. We then said it's a stepping stone. The establishment of CDWs is a stepping stone towards creating a public servant of a special type. We said that at a meeting of the ruling party, in Stellenbosch. It became a message that the president, the former president, delivered as part of the State of the Nation address, that you want to create a public servant of a special type. This is a public servant that we require. A public servant who will not operate on and attach himself and herself to an office, but will actually look at himself and herself against the service that he or she has to provide. A public servant that if you are a teacher, you will see yourself not only confined to a classroom. If you are teaching a learner and this learner is not doing well, you will also develop interest to go and actually check as to what is happening at the family level. If you are a social worker, you will actually do. So this was actually a stepping stone towards us having this public servant. When we arrive at that stage, we will then say, yes, we are at a point where we need to. So we continue faced with the challenge of reality to develop this community development worker program and strengthen it, so that at some stage we will not be saying, we will not be talking of mass superficial, we will not be talking of CDOs, we will not be talking of any other category that we call this food soldiers or service delivery. We'll then be saying, let's talk about this thing. In the report, when the report was presented to me by the Deputy Minister last year, I said, you know what, Deputy Minister, I think it is time we even change this title, you know, of community development. It's time we call these people what to be the agent. That's a debate that is actually going on, but these are people who are supposed to be assisting in as far as service delivery is concerned. The issue about the Tucson Center and accessibility of the Tucson Centers, it's true, as the DG has indicated, we piloted that because it also is an intervention in the new thing. We piloted that we will have to reach, actually we set ourselves a target to then say we will have to make sure that in each municipality there's a Tucson Center. I'm not sure if we now have that. We are not yet there. So that is how we're actually operating, making sure that at each municipality there's a Tucson Center. But we are not saying that that target is the target, that once we achieve it will be satisfied. But we are going to look at service pools. You know, Department of Health came with an arrangement of service pooling services when they introduced this concept of making sure that your first point of contact with a health facility will be a clinic. That they actually group clinics and treat health centers according to the flow of public transport and create centers. So these centers called pools. So if you may then say you have pulled these services together, looking at accessibility, then you create it like that, having achieved the target of a one CDW, I mean one Tucson Center per municipality, you would have actually achieved actually to a point where you then say you may have to address. There is a point raised here that the CDWs are on their own if they are not close to Tucson Center. Can't remember whether it's one of the members who passed or honorable member William. On their own. So can say Messing or Miss CDW, you are on your own if you're not close to a Tucson Center. The idea was to have these Tucson Centers to operate on their own. Empower them so that when you do door to door, it's like when you campaign honorable Dre. It's like when you campaign at the party level, for elections, say vote. When the door to door, you actually literally move from one door to another. You may then group yourself and move as groups, but you are not reporting where you are with me. After doing that, you will then consolidate your report and submit that. So the idea was that you need to be as equipped, to be as empowered. Like when you go door to door, you need your spreadsheet. You need to know that this is what you're recording. So a CDW on his own, on her own, that has to go from one household to another, need to have politics. People will ask questions there. To them say, some will say, oh, are you representing government? Say, yes. Oh, no, that's good. Tell us, how do we go about to get water? How do we get about? So the CDW, the first instrument of empowerment of a CDW is a paralegal manual. They have to have a paralegal manual, a very thick book that is adjusted every time there is there's a revision of legislation. Get these people to have pocket size so that they must be able to deal with some of those questions. So those are the things that let's have this combination of them being capable of dealing with issues in that kind of area as activists. Of course, some areas CDW need assistance. We know to agree, even in the report, to be indicated. We actually identified and then said, but what are we actually dealing with this thing? In some areas, as the DG has indicated, you had situations where some people who are doing work at the level where the CDWs are were complaining that these people are over, are more resourced. Think of the ward committee members. They would then say, we are ward committee members, we are doing the same work with CDWs, but we're not empowered, and so on. We don't even have, that's why the minister of COCTA had to take a decision to come with a funding model for what committee members. It was to actually address this thing. Of course, we're saying there will always be room for improvement. We can't say they are sufficiently equipped. I'll come on the APRM at the end. The issue of considering a possibility of a unit to deal with MDGs, Honorable Zuka. We are speaking of international instruments that actually have to be coordinated. If we are to develop a unit for MDGs, for sure, because we are dealing with these things at the level of domestication, we will then see ourselves at a situation where we will have to have a unit for the APR. Where we'll have a unit for the OECD, where we'll have a unit for all these other international. But similar to what you are saying, the administration under the leadership of President Zuma created a ministry in the President's office, performance monitoring and evaluation. That is, then you then say, if this unit has to deal with issues of performance monitoring and evaluation, what will be the guiding factors? What will be the indicators? What will be guiding them to deal with the things? The MDG is one of them. They have to look as to whether those MDGs that apply to this particular department, they are adhered to. So that is exactly as you are indicating. It's just a question of them saying, this being a new creation, how far have we gone in terms of dealing with those things? But the idea of coordination, the point you raised, is very important. The issue about job creation monitoring, there is a partnership arrangement comprising and led by the Minister of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, and including in that partnership Public Service and Administration and Treasury to look at issues of job creation monitoring. How do we actually deal with this issue? Of course, Honorable Member Andrea, you are right that the report will indicate that in some areas we appear to be doing well. Now the question is, what do we do in those areas where the report says we are doing well? Two things. let's make sure that we sustain it so that we don't drop. And in this presentation, if we then see if the executive presenting to parents, now it means that the executive will have to keep on saying that here we're not dropping, we sustain that. But Parliament also will also have to then say, in our oversight responsibility, we want to make sure that we're not dropping the strategy. Become more vigilant that in those areas where we're doing well, we should sustain that. The second thing about that is that we should ask ourselves, why are we succeeding? Why are we doing well in these areas? What are the things that we're doing right to get ourselves succeeding? And once we know that, we now begin to do those things in all these other areas where we're not doing well. So those are the two things we need to do. Of course, you are right, when you said, in some areas, it's clear that there's room for improvement. Let us learn from the areas where we're doing well and improve them. And you indicated that it's clear that there are areas where there are challenges. Let us learn from the areas where we're doing well and address these things. Let's confront these challenges. What becomes the beauty of this international instrument is that they actually, like I said, we use them to mirror ourselves. So we can't drown in ignorance, failing without even noticing that you're failing, because you'll be having this mirror reflecting, and then you need to then agree and deal with it. We, as government, we introduce the new growth path as an intervention to deal with issues around economic growth. Of course, we then say, as we look at this, we also look at the other commitments, even at international level, to then say, what is it that we can do to address this issue of economic growth? We can play to a certain extent as a country. We can strengthen ourselves there. Whatever Deputy Minister has indicated, we are an international player and we're affected by what is happening at the international level. But also in terms of how we get the situation at the international level to stabilize, it also takes a ready resignation to contribute and then say, let's operate and make sure that we have a better South Africa. We have a growing continent and we have a safe world. And what is it that we need to do? Economic growth is also a factor of stability. It's actually a factor of how we do things in the country. I think there's a lot we can actually talk about. That's why through the NEPAD program and also through the ATR, with that said, we're looking at contributing for economic growth that would translate into a job creation. That would translate into development. And what are those things that we then need to do? I think we can actually deal with that. This CDW question comes on coming, it's very important. Do they know where they are reporting? I think individually, they should be knowing where they report. You know, this program at some stage, it's a vulnerable program, the CDW program. Vulnerable program, it can even be hijacked. So what it takes is for all of us to be vigilant about that, as government, as parliament, Honourable Member Mwale. Whose office is that, this thing? Where you should actually see your CDWs working and the like? Should they work from our parliamentary constituency offices? Who owns the building? Even the Tusong Center themselves. A Tusong Center, when you go to a Tusong Center, who should own that building? It's a very interesting point. You go to the township of Kalishiwe. You go to a Tusong center. That is when it comes to who owns the building. I'm giving that one example. I can talk about other areas. The building is owned by a member of parliament. It's the parliamentary constituency office. But you see, when it comes to the branding of parliamentary constituency offices, when you go there, if it's a DA constituency office, there is an DA constituency. If it's an ANC constituency office, there is an ANC constituency office. In my private life, I was a member of parliament responsible for constituency work. A whip for that matter. I had to whip members of parliament who happens to be in the majority in dealing with issues of constituency. And one point that one was discouraging was that a parliamentary constituency office is an extension of parliament. It has to be accessible, all people have to access the constituency office. So with that said, When you are done in terms of where to utilize your resources of branding offices and decorate them perfectly looking like your party, please do it elsewhere, not in the constituency office. A person should go to a public representative, an extension of parliament. But of course, we noted as parliament that it is so difficult to address that. That's why we came with PDOs. I'm sure we are all aware that we have PCOs and PDOs, Parliamentary Democracy Offices. The Parliamentary Democracy Offices who piloted that. There were three PDOs in the whole country. I'm not sure how many there are. One in Limpopo. At the Muleki area. A parliamentary democracy office, that office, the CDW can use it because it's not a party office. A Tusong center can be located there. But of course, we are then saying our resolve to build a Tusong center will actually address these matters and actually get them going. The point raised about so many anti-corruption fighting mechanisms. I think that was your point, Honorable Member Suka. When we started, and we then say we need to make sure that the zero tolerance to corruption is internalized, we then made a call to say, all of you, wherever you are, you brighten your corner. That's why you have Treasury dealing with issues related to supply chain corrupt activities. That's why you will have Justice dealing with fighting corruption at the level of the deliverer of justice. But we find it everywhere. That's why you will have Home Affairs indicating that no, they actually deal with this issue. We then have this public service and the corruption unit, which is the modeling. We are still engaging in the modeling to have it as a public sector and corruption unit. So that you're not only limited to the provincial and national sphere, but you're also having interest at the local government level. Now, we can report now. Just today, as I was leaving cabinet, I passed through the call center at the Union Building, the call center of the presidential hotline. And I was saying, hey, Minister, we have got new cases that have arrived here on the hotline, through the hotline. And, and we have been calling your unit. I then immediately called the unit and linked them to them. But there are cases that have been submitted. Look at them. We are actually working on making sure that there is this coordination that is taking place. This point was raised when we presented the second report, South Africa's second report on the implementation of the African peer review mechanism on the 29th of January this year, our peers in the continent, saying that you need to come with a mechanism of coordination. It's good to have all these anti-corruption initiatives, but it's also good to deal with the question of coordination. Of course, we are losing. So it's a very important point that honorable members, you are raising. The DG has responded on what he said. We have these interventions, but we acknowledge that we are not already where we want to be. He has responded clarifying that. The issues around private sector targets, Honorable Mwale. In my introduction, I said that we set targets as government. That was when it came to the issue of the domestication of the MDGs, as per the declaration. But when it comes to us participating at the MDG as a global activity, like when it comes to us producing a report, like this report, the 2010 report, we are working as a country. As work as a country, we take the targets of various civil society formations, we take the target of business, we take the targets of government, we put that together and work that way. But as you then say, as a cluster, the GNA, what is it that you are doing? We then talk as government. That's why we then say on this one as government, we do have targets. But we don't, when we participate on at this international initiative, we're not participating like as individual entities who work together. That's why this report. Of course, there will always be challenges here and there. I remember when we were to table the report, there has to be a serious engagement because others were saying, no, we're not consulted. That's the challenge of dealing with issues at the country level. But then we then took a step to actually engage that. Because you'll find, for instance, if it's a civil society, who is civil society? When we're dealing with the country's self-assessment in 2006 in terms of the APRM, Sangoko claimed to be representing, to be an umbrella body of civil society formation. And we therefore were working through Sangoku. And in no time, Sangoku said, no, it can't be Sangoku, it's us. But you look at Sangoku and say, no, man, people are affiliating as individuals. Sangoku is a coalition. But at that point, I think it was in June 2006. It was established that if only 34% of all existing civil society formations that have identified with Sangoku. Now, if it's only 34, then where is the 66? Now, who is bidding for the 66? And so it's interesting, but the issue is that we're looking at how all of us deal with all these issues. Just in conclusion, just about the APRM, we, at provincial level, a honorable member, Suka, was very particular that you find that the situation differ from province to province. It's a reality. I wish honorable member Drea was still here. I wish she was still there. She could then also go and report to the Prime of the Western Cape. because the APRM is guided, I mean, governed by an entity called a governing council. We have the national governing council, we have provincial governing council. The national governing council, which is chaired by the Minister of Public Service and Administration, RAS, executive. The provincial governing mechanism, were two provinces that were still struggling. The first state has come on board, it's okay. In the Western Cape, it's a challenge. But we resolved that, we're going to revise that. We address the Western Cape caucus of the ruling party. To them, they are the ruling party, they are not in government, but they are in government in style. We met the provincial government last week. We raised this issue because there's a need to revise the governing structure. As a country, we were peer reviewed for the first time in 2007 when the report was issued. We are supposed to respond periodically and account in terms of what we are doing on the issues raised. We are accounted for the first time in January 2009, and we are accounted for the second time in January 2011, which is this year. We committed ourselves that we are going to write the first report and submit to the Heads of State Summit in July 2013. And why did you say that? It's because, and when we do that, we are going to then indicate whether we are ready to be peer reviewed for the second time. The risk is that you don't want to be peer reviewed during the year of election or a year before election, because you being peer reviewed will then suggest that you have got our peers in the country coming in, going to the country, right? Meeting people, talking to everybody and stuff like that. There is one item which we think that we have not as yet as a country written a story of South Africa for what the situation is in South Africa. And that is the area about xenophobia. We are raising that because when we submitted, I mean, at the National Program of Action that was developed after our peer review in 2007 identified 9 issues that they said we must respond to. And after that, 3 more issues were identified. Included in these issues were the issue of xenophobia. We are then saying for now, we will be reporting in as far as the APRM is concerned, focusing on the 4 thematic areas of the APRM, but in particular, we are going to focus on writing a story about xenophobia. So that is what we are doing, targeting from July 2013, and then say what we want to achieve. By March 2013, we want to adopt the report, which means the whole year from January 2012 up to December 2012, we'll have to be going through to provinces meeting authorities to give them an opportunity to contribute, amongst other things, dealing with this issue. And what they're saying from now, as we are up to December, is a period of developing a questionnaire, establish what are those questions that give rise to acts that are otherwise explained as xenophobic. So those are the things that were then. So, but also is the question of domesticating the APRM. How do we domesticate it? Our thing to the chair, we would like to present the full report on the APRM. It will be helpful if it is not only to the portfolio. We may start here as our principal a committee, but it would be necessary that we would take international relations and actually seek other committees that would deal with. It's a very interesting report. It talks some of the things that are there in the Millennium Development Goals are things that we're actually putting it on the APRM. So that is the thing. So we're participating, we're doing so well. Our report as a country, coming therefore, because there's a difference between what our peers will say in the continent and what we can say about ourselves. We may then say we believe there's room for improvement, we are not doing well. But when you present the report there, because they're looking at the average picture in very different terms, they may always say, no, but South Africa, you seem to be doing so well. And that's exactly what they said on the 29th of January this year. Appreciated our planning commission, of course, raised some concerns about our structures for fighting corruption. Then saying, because we identified 13 and identified 9+3 issues. And in each one of them, we indicated progress in terms of what we're doing. And that we said we're going to do something about xenophobia. They then said, South Africa, you are one country that even when it comes to the project of democracy, we see democracy alive. We have seen the formation of a political organization breaking away from the ruling party. And they said the reality was that if it was everywhere else, you would have actually seen brother running after brother. You would then have to explain whether the one who is running in front is being chased and the one who's running behind is chasing. And they actually appreciate that, you see. They attend, most of them say they attend our inaugural events where we inaugurate our president, and they say at all times, you find that when a new president is inaugurated, the other presidents who have left office, they are there. They said even the clerk was there when we inaugurated President Begin. President Zuma, President Begin was there, Mandela was there. They then say, it's so wonderful. They say, in the rest of the context, that's why they say, when it comes to democracy, in the rest of the context, you find that when that happen is either the former president is on the run, is out of the country, or is in prison. So we are seen to be still alive to represent what it takes. But back home ourselves, there is nothing as we domesticate that.